Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So here's something about the presidential race I was surprised to see. Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort said on Fox 2 weeks ago that one of the states he considers in play is Connecticut. George Stephanopoulos, a little incredulous, followed up on ABC This Week.
Are you guys really going to be spending money and time in places like Connecticut and Oregon?
We've got a poll that shows Connecticut is almost even. The point is this. The map has expanded.
Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort on ABC. So during the Democratic convention last week, I asked Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy about that, and he said,
I don't think Connecticut's in play. There's been not a lot of polling in Connecticut, but most of it has shown a pretty safe lead for Hillary Clinton here. Manafort is from Connecticut. His family's from Connecticut. Trump, of course, lived in Connecticut for a period of time, so I'm sure they're trying to put the state in play because they have some connection to it. But no, I think Connecticut will be a state that Hillary will win.
That is Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy from the Democratic convention last week. So let's talk about Connecticut politics in this election year as one of our three local states with Colin McEnroe from Hartford Public Radio Station, WNPR, and host of the Colin McEnroe Show. Hi, Colin. Welcome back to WNYC.
Yeah, good morning, Brian.
So what's that poll that Manafort was citing that they were like neck and neck? Do you know what that is?
Got to be an internal poll. There's no poll like that unless you consider 5 points to be a toss-up. So the last time Connecticut was polled by Quinnipiac, which was in June, in fact, Clinton had a 7-point lead until you add Gary Johnson and Jill Stein into the mix. Then she loses 2 more points. It gets a little bit closer there. To be fair, Gary Johnson and Jill Stein, if they make it onto the Connecticut ballot, probably would have a bigger impact than what showed up on that poll because their names, especially Johnson's, were, fairly new to Connecticut voters. So with a little bit of help from third-party candidates, it's possible Trump could narrow the poll down so that the race is much closer.
So Connecticut listeners, is your state in play in the presidential race? How else do you see Connecticut in the context of national politics right now? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Or even if you're not in Connecticut, what do you want to ask Colin McEnroe from WNPR, the Hartford Public Radio Station? 212-433-9692. When's the last time that Connecticut voted Republican in a presidential race?
I would have to think way back. It hasn't happened in a really long time.
It might be Reagan 84.
I think maybe 88 we went Republican.
George H.W. Over Dukakis.
Right. Bush won over Dukakis in 88. That would be the last time.
When's the last time Connecticut even had a Republican senator?
Well, it depends on whether or not you count. Well, Lowell Weicker would have been our last Republican senator.
Right.
He obviously switched to a third-party candidate when he ran for governor, but he was our last Republican senator.
Because
Republicans would say it doesn't really count.
Yeah, he was such a liberal Republican. And Joe Lieberman won as a pro-Iraq war independent after he lost a Democratic primary, and that was just a decade or so ago.
Right. So Lieberman was the unusual candidate who could fish out of three ponds. He ran as a third-party candidate, formed his own party. The Republican candidate that year was not a strong candidate, and Republicans were encouraged, really, by their leadership to flock towards Lieberman. So he got a certain number of baseline Democratic votes. He got the people who identified with this new third party, and he got Republicans. It's hard to beat a candidate who can fish out of three ponds.
I guess so. And then Lieberman, we remember, who was Al Gore's running mate, was seriously considered, they say, to be John McCain's running mate on a Republican ticket in 2008. That's how much out of three ponds he was.
Right. I don't know if he was seriously considered by anybody except John McCain. I think Republican leadership wasn't really crazy about that idea. I will say we've had strong Republican politicians, and Trump does remind me a little bit of John Rowland, who won three different gubernatorial elections here, 94, 98, and 2002. Keep in mind also, we've had a lot of Republican members of Congress. We've had Rob Simmons, Stu McKinney, Nancy Johnson, Chris Shays. We don't have any Republican members of our congressional delegation now. But, you know, if you go back about 10 years, we did.
And do you think that's just a kind of permanent change for Connecticut? You know, Chris Shays used to come on the show all the time when he was in Congress, and he was very carefully positioning himself to be a moderate. And then he lost to Jim Himes. And, you know, of course, that's southwestern Connecticut. For our listeners that don't know, that's Fairfield County, basically the New York suburb area of Connecticut and around there. And if it's never going back, it's never going back, and a Republican isn't going to win the presidential race there. But how much has Connecticut turned blue just over these last 10 years or so?
I don't think that's a permanent thing, and I don't think it's even permanent here in 2016. I would say that there is a congressional district that could flip. It's not that one. It's not the Jim Himes one. It's the 5th district. It kind of runs down the Naugatuck River in Connecticut. It includes Waterbury and then a lot of, you know, formerly industrial towns heading south along either Route 8 or the Naugatuck River. Trump ran incredibly strong there in the primary. The primary is not a good indication, not a good predictor. But you can't completely ignore he got 70% in most of those towns. And it's the kind of place, Brian, that might appeal to a certain kind of Trump voter, particularly because Connecticut's economy is lagging behind the rest of the nation. Huh. Our economic recovery is unbelievably slow. It's slow compared to our neighbors. So if, in fact, Trump is successfully exploiting economic discontent and the sense of people being left behind, a lot of the people who live down that corridor, that Naugatuck River corridor, those are the people who see themselves exactly that way.
That's kind of the Rust Belt area of Connecticut, if you will,
exactly.
Right? If you're talking about the Waterbury area and like that. Well, what's the Connecticut economy based on? For our listeners in New York and New Jersey thinking, I thought Connecticut was, you know, the elite leafy suburbs that people take Metro North in to work on Wall Street from, and the insurance industry in Hartford, which is another very white-collar kind of industry. And you say the recovery is more slow in Connecticut than most of the nation. What is the Connecticut economy?
Well, it's a melange of financial services stuff, still a little bit of manufacturing, and the insurance industry is here, but not with the kind of strength and ubiquity that it used to have. Similarly, the defense industry is still here, but not the same way it was in the really golden age of Sikorsky and Pratt and Whitney. There's been shrinkage rather than growth in a lot of the sectors that Connecticut depends on. And also, Brian, we live in an age of cities. And Connecticut cities are not prospering. Bridgeport and New Haven. New Haven is probably the closest thing to a success story, but Bridgeport and Hartford, these aren't the kind of cities that attract people the way, say, like Austin, Texas, think of any of the nascent, upswinging American cities. We don't have that kind of thing in Connecticut.
David in New Canaan, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Good morning. Colin, I've been reading your work for the last 25 years, so it's good to talk to you.
Well, thank you.
So my comment is that I echo what you guys have been saying. I live in New Canaan. I'm a registered Republican. I am going to vote for Hillary this year, but I do want to say that the discontent in Connecticut, even in the Southwest, is real. Because what we have is we've got a large mismanagement of the Connecticut state government, and that's resulted in budget deficits and constant struggle each year to make payments, and that's been the blame has to fall upon the Democratic Party that's been in power for years. And that discontent, I think, is going to fuel a lot closer of a race in Connecticut than I think that some of the polls are indicating.
Interesting, David. Colin, what do you think?
No, I think he's right. And I think the economic discontent is real. I think one thing that you absolutely will see are a lot of our own state legislator races. Those are going to flip. We're going to have a lot of seats flipping this time around. People are unhappy. He's absolutely right about the condition of the state budget. I mean, I know a lot of states are facing deficits and budget dysfunction. Ours seems worse to me, but maybe that's because I see it up so close. So there's a lot of discontent about that. And then the question would be, you know, to what degree can Trump tap into that and position himself as a logical alternative? I'll say one thing really quickly, which is one of the numbers that intrigues me goes back to the primaries. So on our primary ballot, there was a thing you could check that said uncommitted. And basically that meant that for either party, you were – it was like electing – voting for another superdelegate. You were voting, but you weren't voting for a delegate affiliated with either Clinton, Sanders, Trump, Kasich. You were just voting. 7,500 people checked uncommitted. 2% of the Republicans who voted checked uncommitted. 3% of the Democrats who voted checked uncommitted. Now think about that. Those are people who made the trip to the polls. There wasn't any other reason to go to the polls that day. Yeah. They went to the effort of voting, and then they said, I really am not voting for anybody in particular. So those are a lot of people who either are going to stay home in November or they're going to go someplace else. Or, I mean, 7,500 in Connecticut, that's a lot of voters.
Yeah. So David brought up the state government and the budget deficits and the problems. How's Governor Malloy doing? A few years ago, he positioned himself as the anti-Chris Christie, the most liberal governor in our region versus the most conservative with, you know, he didn't say Andrew Cuomo somewhere in the middle, but I'll say that. But is that how he acts and how he governs?
I wouldn't say that that's how he acts and how he governs. I mean, he's certainly liberal on some high-profile issues like gun control and criminal justice reform. But in other ways, I think, you know, he's basically governing, overseeing a state of fiscal dysfunction. So it's almost hard to live out whatever your policies are when there's no money to spend on anything. I mean, basically, you're cutting all kinds of things that might even be things that are near and dear to you. He's very unpopular right now. His approval ratings are toxically low, and you know, it's hard to see what his future actually is. There was certainly a lot of talk, because he's very prominently associated with the Hillary Clinton campaign, that should Clinton win, there might be some pot of gold waiting for him in Washington, D.C. I don't know whether that's true or not. It doesn't feel to me somehow like he's going to be get a cabinet post or something, but if he wants a parachute, maybe they'll hand him one.
Well, we had David in New Canaan calling in before, kind of with one analysis. This might be a competing analysis from Vito in New Canaan. Hi, Vito. You're on WNYC.
Hello, Brian. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have both a comment and a question. I am a rare breed in New Canaan. I'm a Democrat. And I've heard Republicans in this town call Hillary Clinton hell, gleefully taunt me about how
Trump called her the devil yesterday. Did you hear that? He actually called her the devil.
That. Yeah, it's nothing new.
Right.
I've heard them, have fun questioning whether the president was born in America, that the president only got into Harvard because he was black. This is the kind of mindset a lot of people in this town have. At the same time, Jim Himes unseated Chris Shays, and he's been reelected. So without knowing all of Connecticut, it seems to me that if Jim Himes is doing well and is going to get reelected, if Fairfield County, especially the so-called Gold Coast, is the most Republican voting area of the state, especially the towns, not the big cities, mm-hmm. that it would seem pretty safe for Clinton to take Connecticut this time around.
Vito, thank you very much. And is Paul Manafort backing up what he said on TV about Connecticut being in play by putting Trump in there to campaign at all? Is anything at all scheduled?
I know of nothing that's scheduled. I mean, he came through here twice during the primary season. To Vito's point, though, I still would say that the tippiest of our five congressional districts is not the fourth where he lives, but the fifth. That's where Elizabeth Esty is currently the congressperson. And just to be clear about this, I mean, first of all, yeah, Manafort's from Connecticut. His father was the mayor of New Britain, Connecticut. He's got a lot of ties here. But I think mostly he's blowing smoke right now. I think a lot of things would have to happen in a very particular way for Trump to collect the seven electoral votes of Connecticut.
So if we assume it's really not in play, would Manafort be going on TV and saying it is in play in order to help gin up interest and get out the vote in other states like Michigan and Wisconsin and things like that?
That could be part of his strategy. And one thing, and I think John Dickerson said the same thing, all of us are crazy if we say, oh, I know what's going to happen, or I can completely rule out something that's going to happen. So I can't sit here and tell you that Trump can't win Connecticut. In fact, I can construct a path to victory for him. It's just that path to victory is so boutique. You know, so many things have to go right that I still put it in, you know, a pretty sequestered area of possibility.
Brendan in Bridgeport, you're on WNYC. Hi, Brendan.
Hey, guys. I'm calling from Bridgeport. I kind of heard your point about how Connecticut sort of has this image as a leafy suburb, and I was working, I just left my job, but I was working in the health kitchen at Ogilvy Mathers. And I would get these, I'm from Bridgeport, and people seem to not realize that, like, Connecticut does have cities that are struggling and how the economy along the Gold Coast has kind of recovered along with the economic recovery of the nation. But as a, like, level of equality, Bridgeport, New Haven, not so much Stamford, but Bridgeport, New Haven, Waterbury, they're kind of microcosms of, like, the greater wealth discrepancy across the country. You know, we've got beautiful, leafy suburbs, and then Bridgeport in 2014 was ranked the third most dangerous city in the country by the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, I think that's kind of glossed over quite a bit. And I think one of the reasons for that is that Connecticut abolished the county government structure back in the 70s. So state money goes to very wealthy towns and their education systems that are already very well off and well funded, where a place like Bridgeport or a place like New Haven or a place like Hartford gets a smaller portion per head than a very wealthy town like Darien or New Canaan.
Colin, he's right about all of that, right?
Yeah, although Malloy, one thing you have to say for Malloy, he has worked to try to make that system fairer so that cities and towns in need get a bit bigger slice of the pie. And the pie got so small over the last few budget cycles, there just isn't that much money to give out anyway. But Malloy has worked on that. But maybe the key thing that he's saying, and this is a hard thing for people to wrap their mind around, but Hartford, the capital city of Connecticut, is about 15 or 16 square miles. I mean, that's tiny. That's a tiny little place. And it also has a tremendous amount of tax-exempt property in it. So, yeah, our cities they're small. They don't have the buffer. You know, they don't have the equivalent of a wealthier, more affluent residential district to kind of help with the health of the city. Those are completely separate entities. Those are suburbs that have their own governments. That is a big problem for our city.
Because the county structure was done away with. Senator Richard Blumenthal is up for re-election. Does he have a Republican challenger yet?
He has he's had two. One of them was a guy named August Wolf, who, apropos of what's happening later this week, is a former Olympic athlete. He was a shot putter, which is kind of a good metaphor for being a Republican in Connecticut. You know, put a tremendous amount of effort to throw something that doesn't go very far. Wolf basically had to bow out for a bunch of different reasons, was not able to petition his way on. So the Republican establishment, they have a state legislator, a guy named Dan Carter, who's running, not a guy who's very high profile. I mean, one problem for the Connecticut Republicans is they don't have good candidates. You know, for major offices the last few times around, they've either run these garish Linda McMahon WWE campaigns or this guy Tom Foley, who's a millionaire from the Greenwich area. Those aren't people who really resonate or identify well with most of the rest of Connecticut. And they just haven't really developed a lot of prominent people who can run for office. So The bench is weak. I mean, nobody wants to run against Blumenthal. Blumenthal has a tremendous approval rating, high recognition.
Uh-huh.
You run against him, you're basically the goat that they stake out for the Tyrannosaurus in Jurassic Park.
Oh. You know, I didn't realize
he's going to come and eat you.
He's that popular. He was the state attorney general for a long time and very popular in that role, although he had his fudging his Vietnam War record thing when he was running the first time for Senate. I guess that's worn off then.
Yeah, I don't think that that's a – I mean, there will always be people who remember that, but that hasn't stuck to him.
Just as a footnote, there was talk for a while that the conservative talk show host, Lawrence Kudlow, would run against Blumenthal, mostly because he saw Blumenthal as weak on national security with his support of the Iran deal. Kudlow talked about it on a show for a few months and then decided against. Was that ever serious?
I don't think it was. I mean, I can't look into the mind and heart of Larry Kudlow. I don't really know. But, as we all know, a campaign is a really rigorous thing. It's a very heavy commitment. If you want to unseat a very popular incumbent like Blumenthal, it's going to be a night and day effort. You're going to have to raise a ton of money.
Yeah.
I just don't think any of that was really on his radar screen.
I guess he, like a lot of other people, decided that Richard Blumenthal is just too popular in 2016. So on that note, we will leave it with Colin McEnroe, host of the Colin McEnroe Show on WNPR, the public radio station in Hartford. Thanks for coming on periodically as you do and filling us in.
Brian, it's always fun.